Building Bridges, Your Community and Labor Report, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
Instruction, not destruction, protesting proposed school closing.
We're going to turn our attention now to something that was both quite frightening and enormously exciting. I was kind of minding my business and driving by in Brooklyn, Brooklyn Technical High School, nearby where I live, and I said, my goodness, it's 1 a.m. What in the world is going on there? There were tons of folks outside of the school and thousands more inside, even at that time. What we're going to look at, and we're going to find out why they were there, the city's Department of Education's panel for education policy was meeting at Brooklyn Technical High School, and thousands of teachers, parents, and students, and concerned community members were out on a chilly evening to protest the Department of Education's plan to close 19 city schools this year.
All 19 of the schools slated to close are in largely Black and Latino areas and overwhelmingly populated by students of color. We'll talk with parent and teacher representatives who are chanting instruction, not destruction, and claim there is no justifiable reason for closing the schools, and even raise the specter of privatizing the public school system.
Now, instruction, not destruction, protesting proposed school closings with Carmen Applewhite, teacher, candidate for UFT president, and chancellor of the International Association of Educators for Peace. And James Eterno, teacher, Jamaica High School, UFT chapter chair, and also candidate for UFT president, and William Hargraves III, member of the Coalition for Public Education and a parent. Let's play. I'll play for the moment. Chancellor Klein. The schools need to be closed. They failed, and we have to distribute the students elsewhere, and charter schools will be put in their places. So what say the three of you?
Well, I would say it's Chancellor Klein. I like to call him Chancellor because that's what it seems like he does. He cancels all the public schools. He's not really a chancellor. I really don't understand the purpose of closing a school. I understand it if the building is structurally unsafe and you're condemning the building. Or I can understand it if it's no longer going to be a school, it's going to be warehouse, something else. But I don't see the purpose of closing a school to keep a school open, to replace them with other students. I just don't understand that. And for the life of me, the way I see it, fix the schools. It's called a public school for a reason. Public schools should be for the public. It should not be a privatized or a movement to privatize the school. And especially what they're doing is, if even in the worst case scenario, if you did bring a charter school into a public school environment, why would you bring in grades to compete with one another? If you have a public school that goes from pre-K to, say, 6, why would you bring in charter schools with the same grade? Why, if you had the space, why wouldn't you try and bring from 7 to whatever? So that's what I would start off with. I would like for him to explain the logic behind that for beginning.
Carmen?
My concern as a teacher is the fact that public schools are being closed without proper notification to the public. My school was one of the first schools that shut down in 2007 when they started this whole report card situation. My school was not a failing school. That was PS 304 at 280 Hart Street in Brooklyn. And my school was not a failing school. We got bonuses. And the reason our school shut down was because we were reporting what was happening in our building. There were things happening in our buildings to staff and to students that we brought to the Department of Education's attention. And instead of fixing the problem, they shut us down and they reopened with new schools and did not rehire the staff that was in the building except for a few handpicked people who were in the principal's pocket. The reason why we were upset about our school closing, at least these people, they have notification that their school is closing. We were never told. They just came in and told us one day, we're shutting you down. There's nothing you could do about it. That was it. Nobody gave us a chance to have a hearing. Nobody listened to what we had to say. They just shut us down. So my concern is the fact that the chancellor is shutting down schools without going through the proper process, which is the CINE process and the SIR process by New York State Education Department. So I'd like to know, why is he bypassing federal and state mandates and just shutting schools down when he just feels like it, to reopen them as either a charter school or a new smaller school, which does not benefit the community where he's shutting the school down at?
I agree with Carmen. They should be following the state and federal guidelines. But in the case of this year, they did change the governance law, so it forced them to have these public hearings, which were basically just a show to let people vent. I went to the public hearing at Norman Thomas High School in Manhattan. I went to Beach Channel over in the Rockaways. Of course, I went to Jamaica, which is my school. And I also went to BCAE, which is on the campus magnet campus in Eastern Queens also. I listened to hundreds of speakers talk about their school, parents, students, teachers, administrators, and community people. Not one person, not one said, you know, you really should pull the plug on this school. It really isn't working. All of the speakers unanimously spoke out in support of their schools. These public schools are worth keeping. We take anyone and educate them. The charter schools cannot make that claim.
I would like to piggyback on that because myself as well have been to several public hearings, but I would just like to focus on the one that I was at last Tuesday in Brooklyn, the one that you passed in the wee hours of morning. I stayed the duration. It was 9 hours. I was there at 4 p.m. and I left there about 3:30 in the morning. I stayed for the duration. What's the most puzzling is that it was really a sham, but it was necessary for me to stay there to just get the whole impact of the farce that they've been perpetuating since they've been full steam ahead with charter schools. Like James said, you had hordes of students, unprecedented, from all the schools, from Jamaica, from Christopher Columbus, from Paul Robeson, from 334, all these schools that were slated to close, you had children passionately coming, one behind another. They had over 350 people that signed up to speak. They had teachers, they had parents, and they even had Councilman Robert Jackson, along with Dr. Annie B. Martin, the head of the New York chapter of the NAACP, who's been at that helm for 31 years. And I have to bring this out because they claimed to be so concerned about the disenfranchised and the underprivileged Black and Latino kids. But they didn't even use the discretion and proper judgment in allowing somebody who represents such a big organization as the NAACP to surpass her two-minute allotment, whereas they did that with Robert Jackson, which I thought was appropriate. I'm saying on one hand, they claim to be for the minority and the disenfranchised, but on the other hand, they showed the disrespect to not give her her proper dues. And they never refuted anything. It would have felt better if they would have refuted some of the accusations that was thrown at them as to why it should stay open. But they never did that.
Carmen, I want to sort of cut to the quick on this. If a school like Jamaica or some other school is closed, let's get specific. What happens to the students? What happens within the confines of that school? Is it better for the kids?
Not necessarily. Because if you notice, there have been some of the schools that are shutting down were products of Chancellor Klein's new school initiatives where he decided to create new, smaller high schools. And some of those same schools that he created are being shut down with only a year in business. Sometimes it benefits the kids, sometimes it doesn't, but at this present time, moment in time, it's not benefiting anyone because he's just shutting down these high school, major high schools that have been in institutions and neighborhoods for years, educating hundreds and thousands of children with famous alumni, and he's creating schools that sometimes are properly mismanaged fiscally as well as administratively. People need to look at how these schools are operating and how they're being run because it's not really helping the children. They're shutting down Maxwell High School. They shut down Clara Barton High School. They shut down Prospect Heights. Clara Barton used to produce LPN nurses. Mm-hmm. We have a nursing shortage in this country and in New York City. However, there's no place for these kids to go to become LPNs because they shut down the vocational schools that were training them to have a trade, an applied science trade, to go out there and find employment if they can't go to college. So how is he helping these children when they're shutting down programs that were created to help the disenfranchised become productive members of society?
James?
That's our concern. You're shutting down programs like Maxwell Vocational High School. You shut down Clara Barton. You shut down all these schools that were giving kids a trade, giving them an opportunity to go into the medical field or go into a trade where they could become employed, and you're shutting the schools down and not giving them an opportunity. And that's what we're concerned about.
Yeah, there's really agenda here to move the kids around. Now, take, for instance, my school, Jamaica High School. We have a lot of what they call over-the-counter students. These are students that don't come through the traditional way of coming from the middle schools right to the high schools. A lot of them have just moved into the area. Many have just moved into the country. So this year, for instance, we've taken in over 330 students over the counter, and 86 are not on grade level, 21 are bilingual Spanish speaking, you have 45 English language learners, you have 18 who are what we call students with interrupted formal education, meaning they couldn't pay the school fees in their own home country, so they come here and we're working with them, and 23 are special education. Think about it. These new small schools that will go into our building next year, are they going to have the room for these non-traditional students? The answer is no. They're going to start with these very, very small classes and then slowly build up. No way they're going to have room for these self-contained special ed students and other what I call non-traditional students. Those students are going to end up going to other overcrowded schools in Queens. Then they become troubled schools, and then they close them, and the cycle continues. It's got to stop.
Do the charters and these small schools have to take in these students? Aren't they more selective in who they can take and who they don't?
Or don't they cherry pick rather than selective?
Well, I can talk about my building very quickly. We have a school already in our building, Queens Collegiate, and they do take some least restrictive environment special ed, but they don't take the most restrictive environment, what they call self-contained special education, and very few ESL. They just don't have the teachers in that small environment.
I'm just flabbergasted and flawed by the notion that the school, the building, the edifice, the thing becomes what has failed in effect, and you close it. What happened to the ideological sway or notion that children are teachable, that you relate to community, that you relate to culture, that there is creativity? Where did that somehow fall by the wayside so that the child is blamed as unteachable and the school building becomes the problem and not the whole philosophic and curriculum issues for our school system, which, as we know, historically, the public school system in New York has produced some of the finest minds and most creative souls that we have?
Well, everything is about numbers nowadays. And if you're not meeting the numbers, then they just shut you down like you're some McDonald's franchise that didn't do enough business for the last quarter. In my school, they're throwing at us the graduation rate. It's just not high enough, the four-year graduation rate. And we keep coming back at them and saying, well, first of all, the numbers that you're producing are wrong. And second of all, you cannot judge a four-year rate. If I sent you or somebody else to Italy and you didn't know Italian, and they said, okay, compete with those Italian students, it might be a little difficult for you and you might need a little bit of extra time. And this four-year rate is just an arbitrary number, and it really has to go.
If you really get to the heart of it and you go to the bedrock of the situation and you unearth it, charter school is a bottom line business. It's about the business of making money. It's being backed by billionaires, Bloomberg, Bill and Melinda Gates, the Walton family, and you keep digging, you find out there's other billionaires that back that. And the one thing that billionaires have in common, that's about making money.
Well, how do they make money off the charter schools?
Well, anybody can open up a charter school. You can open up a charter school. I can open up a charter school. They get private funding, very lucrative. Because really, you become a CEO of that school. Initially, the conception of charter schools was brought out to help and assist the public schools. But somebody got a bright idea and they seen that there's money to be made. And that's why they create a vacuum. They create a vacuum in the sense, so I'll give you a hypothetical. In PS 123, you had four-year-old kids that started pre-K, right? They no longer could go register at that school. They had to go to 125th Street, even if they lived across the street. Now, charter schools supposed to start at kindergarten, but they gave HSA, Harlem Success Academy, which is the golden child of the charter school, they renamed it so that they could bring in a class of 4 years old children. And they were able to register them at that school. Now, you got a parent that's coming across the street to register their child, and you find out you can't register them at that public school, that you have to go 20 blocks to your west, and you find out that there's a school upstairs that you can register them to, and they keep that restriction until the first day of school. And they do a lot of trickeries and chagrineries to create vacuums, therefore making your school under capacity so that it creates a space for the charter school. They do that deliberately.
Carmen?
What people must understand is a charter school is a public school. The difference between a charter school and your traditional public school is the funding aspect of it and the school governance aspect of it. The school governance aspect is that they are run by a board of directors. In terms of funding, they can fundraise in excess of over $1 million, whereas a regular public school can't, based on the restraints and chancellor's regulations that we're under. We can't do the same thing fiscally. However, an important point to note is that a charter school is supposed to operate based on a lottery system. Children are supposed to be selected based on a lottery. What the charter schools are doing, because of the climate in New York City, they are recruiting children who are enrolled in traditional public school buildings that they come and occupy. That creates a situation where the enrollment of the traditional public school falls below the amount that is needed to sustain that school and get a certain amount of federal and state funding. Therefore, the money that's coming into the charter school, charter schools are being funded by private corporations and they are getting funded by other hedge fund sources. However, if they were really following the law and the letter of a charter school situation, the money that's in the public school where that child attended is supposed to follow him or her to that charter school. That's not happening. So you have all this money that's floating around that nobody knows where the money is. So you're laying off school aides and you're laying off teachers and you want to lay off everybody and only give us a 2% raise. So where's that extra money going that is left there? That money is going to Tweed Courthouse to hire more executives and more administrators to walk around and give themselves titles but do nothing to assist the teachers or the parents or the children in the schools so that they can be successful. They create situations where schools deliberately fail in order to lower their enrollment and then create these small schools and these charter schools. This is systematically happening, and we believe it's being done to privatize the public school system and union bust our union, because the chancellor and the mayor does not like union activity in public schools, and charter schools don't necessarily have to have union.
James?
You need to follow the money, basically, and this is definitely a union-busting activity, because when you get the students in a charter school, you're probably not going to have as many of the most difficult, well, the most non-traditional students. They're going to take a cherry pick, because if you look, who's going to get into a lottery? Who's going to start and just involve themselves in this lottery situation? It's parents who are motivated enough to apply in the lottery system, whereas the public schools, as we've been saying, we take anybody. There is an agenda to make the charter schools look good.
I look at the schools, and there's, of course, an additional element here, which is that the schools are overarchingly in Black and Latino areas, and they also have a population that is overwhelmingly Black and Latino. So how do we look at that issue within this context as well? What is this saying as they try to close these 19 schools?
As an African-American educator, what you're saying to me is that our children are not learning, and they're not learning because the majority of the professionals in the school system in those neighborhoods happen to be teachers of color. So you're saying to me that we are not able to educate our own children when you go out and you recruit people of other denominations to come into our school and educate our kids, or you shut down our school and you make sure that 75 to 80% of the staff that you hire are of another persuasion or skin tone to educate our children. So you're saying to me that African American and Latino children cannot learn based on the lack of resources that you're giving us in the school. The chancellor and the mayor wants everyone to believe that all the schools are funded equally and we're all given the same materials and we all have the same things. That is not true. Public needs to understand that. We have no curriculum. We have no proper resources. You have some schools that don't even have a computer lab or proper computer facilities for the children. We don't have science labs in all of our schools. Children are not getting physical education, which is required by state law. There are things that are being done in our schools systematically in Latino and African American communities to deliberately keep them performing at a low academic level. It has nothing to do with the level of teaching or the quality of teaching. It has nothing to do with their socioeconomic background. It has to do with the way the system is designed in our neighborhoods to deliberately keep our children performing at a low level because there is money and big business and academic failure. Every time
I'm going to jump in right now, Carmen.
William Hargraves.
What they're doing is they're retarding growth of minority students, because it's back to Brown versus Board of Ed. I went to a lot of public hearings, and I remember in one in particular, this young lady of a different background said that she firmly believed for children to succeed that they need to go to school 6 days a week, X amount of hours, in order to close the digital divide. I took exception to that. I raised my hand. I was the first hand up, and I said, you're talking about closing the digital divide. You're really creating one, because in schools such as 123 and other schools, the principal had to get creative. I mean, what is a school without a library? They had to turn the library into classroom. They took their resource room, their computer room, they had to turn that over to the charter school. Not only do they come, the sitting school doesn't even get the pick of the litter. They come in and they pick whatever floor, whatever class, regardless of how you're already situated. So they really don't care. All it is a cash grab. And those that have the cash and that's making the rules will rule, for the simple fact that the public school have to use union labor. Charter schools can get anybody, any Joe off the street.
Let's broaden it out a little bit also, because we're talking this in the context also of budget cuts, also in terms of Mayor Bloomberg. Basically 19 schools. This is a massive reorganization in the middle of budget cuts. Let's just broaden it out a bit.
James
Eterno?
You're not going to have all the schools be replaced, first of all, by charter schools. That should be out there. Many of them are going to be replaced by new public schools. But in terms of the charters, they have been concentrated in several neighborhoods in Upper Manhattan, in the Bronx, and in Brooklyn mostly. And you don't see any charter schools in the suburbs. And if you have Newt Gingrich and Al Sharpton on the same page with this, you have to be careful. And as Bill was saying before, you really have to look at the money. And that what this is about is more of a money grab. For the closing schools who are being replaced in the normal public schools system, that's the Bloomberg philosophy, that smaller is necessarily better, but smaller certainly isn't cost efficient. And what we would like to see, instead of closing these schools, take the money that's going to be needed for startup. For instance, in my school, you're going to have four principals, four sets of administration. Take that money, use it for one principal, and let that one principal have lower class sizes, have guidance caseloads that are manageable so that counselors can do more than just handle crisis and program. Those are the things that the students need: social workers, psychologists, paraprofessionals to work with the needy kids. That's where that money should be going.
Carmen, the United Federation of Teachers filed a lawsuit which accuses the city of violating the state mayoral control law by failing to account for the impact of the shutdowns on the community. So what are the impacts on the community, and what do you think about the lawsuit?
I think the lawsuit is correct. I fully support the UFT decision to do a lawsuit, because someone needs to start taking a closer look at why these schools are being shut down and how they're being shut down. They're not taking into account the impact that it's going to have on a community. Some kids may have to go to a school where they have to get on public transportation, where they've never been traveled trained before. I'm not talking about the high school kids. Of course, they're older. But I'm talking about some elementary school children have to go out of their way to get to school. So that creates a busing situation. Or perhaps they're not going to be able to be accepted into the school, because when they open the smaller school, they don't necessarily take all the children back from the original school. You have to go to other places, which causes, like James says, overcrowding in the other schools. So they did not do a proper impact study, which according to the new school governance law, they were supposed to do, and they were supposed to give this information to people before they made their grand announcement. The legalities of the law has not been followed to the letter, as it claimed that they were when they passed this new revision of mayor control law. So it's going to be very interesting to see how this lawsuit turns out and what happens to the schools, and if, in fact, they are going to close all of these schools as they have stated, because I don't believe they have followed the law correctly.
William, why 19 schools? Why now? What's going on?
You know, you must have read my mind, because I was thinking about that, too. It's mind-boggling.
Ken's usually been prophetic.
He's pretty good.
Wow.
It's mind-boggling that you can go to a public hearing, and you can sit there for 9 hours, and nobody in that panel said anything. One person after another person after another person paraded and talked about how the numbers were skewed, because teachers have to be able to teach. And the mayor had 8 appointees, and every borough president had one. They voted as one voice for 19 schools to be closed. How can you tell me that you can sit there for 9 hours and it's not one passionate plea that at least one person breaks the rank and says, how does...
I thought the borough presidents except Staten Island, the representatives voted against it.
The Staten Island,
yeah.
That was the 9th vote. But nobody out of the 8 appointees for the mayor's office stepped out. And you would say if they were being objective, you would think maybe a passion for one or two schools they might have voted against.
We're just about out of time. But we want to know now, in about 30 seconds apiece, what is to be done? And William Hargraves, let's start with you. I know there's a national demonstration coming up.
On March the 4th at 1 o'clock, we're asking everybody to wear red. And we're going to have a rally at City Hall. And it's being put together by the Coalition for Public Education that believes in public schools for public children and our people's board of education. People need to come out because sooner or later it's going to get bigger and you're going to have to come out. Do it for the kids.
James Eterno, what is to be done?
The one good thing that's come out of all of this has been the mobilization of the communities. You've seen the teachers, the students, and the community, the parents, all together. That mobilization has to be continued. We can't think this is the end. We just have to think this is the beginning, and the next stage is March 4th and then beyond.
Carmen?
Well, I believe that the public, parents, teachers, administrators, general members of the communities need to hold their public officials accountable. They need to contact everyone in politics that they have put in office and let them know that education is important. We must stand together as one. We must contact our officials and let them know we want an investigation into why all these schools are closing in New York City and only in communities of color.
Carmen Applewhite, teacher candidate for UFT president. James Eterno, teacher and also candidate for UFT president. William Hargraves, member of the Coalition for Public Education Parent. Keep organizing. This is our city. Let's reclaim it. Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our new website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.